Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. And from Florida Tax Watch Prudential Productivity Awards, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas. Sponsored by Prudential, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plans. More information online at floridataxwatch.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A last-minute judicial ruling strikes down part of Florida's new anti-abortion law.
We're really happy, so we will be working diligently.
Also this week, what impact could the Zika virus and Olympic-related travel have on Florida? We'll hear from state and health officials as well as an Olympic hopeful.
I mean, there will always be the fear, but I won't let that fear cripple me.
We'll also examine the Orlando shooting aftermath in the context of calls for more gun control and pleas not to further stigmatize those with mental illness. And we'll talk with the lady whose singing performance in Washington's Lincoln Memorial made millions of hearts soar. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Three provisions in a wide-ranging abortion measure passed earlier this year are on hold after a federal judge intervened late Thursday evening. Nick Evans reports the case comes on the heels of a major abortion ruling in the U.S. Supreme Court.
The last week represents something of a sea change in abortion case law. The U.S. Supreme Court just struck down two Texas provisions that heighten regulations on abortion providers.
The first law says that a doctor at the abortion clinic must have admitting privileges.
That's Justice Stephen Breyer interrogating Scott Keller, Solicitor General for the state of Texas. Breyer pressed Keller to give an example of that requirement offering a medical benefit. Keller couldn't provide one. So Breyer moved on to the second provision, demanding clinics meet the same standards as ambulatory surgical centers.
And so what is the benefit here to giving, the woman, this ambulatory surgical center, when the risk is minuscule compared to common procedures that women run every day in other areas without ambulatory surgical centers?
That has never been the test under Casey about substantial.
Well, now it is. Breyer's majority opinion says the question of whether an abortion restriction presents an undue burden, a legal test often used in abortion cases, is answered by weighing its benefits against its hardships. A lower court deferred to the Texas legislature, allowing lawmakers had a rational basis for imposing the law because they believed it would improve women's health. In Florida, that ruling came at a consequential moment. This is the federal court for the Northern District of Florida last Wednesday. Planned Parenthood in the state just met before a judge to argue whether portions of a wide-ranging abortion law should be allowed to take effect.
It was clear from the Supreme Court case this week that these are medically unnecessary restrictions. Planned Parenthood has been a valuable part of the communities in Florida for over 50 years, and so we've seen an escalation in these tactics under the guise of protecting the health and safety of women.
That's Planned Parenthood Affiliates of Florida Executive Director Laura Goodhue. Her organization challenged three parts of the law. One part defunds abortion providers even if the money was going toward other services for women's health. Another requires half a provider's records be audited every year. And the last changes how doctors define trimesters. The bill's Senate sponsor, Lakeland Republican Kelly Stargell, defends the changes.
It's not shutting down clinic. It's not stopping a woman's right to have that abortion. It's just making sure that we have the same level of care on a woman who's having an abortion as we do other similar procedures.
Despite that, the judge blocked the defunding and reporting requirements. Here's Goodhue speaking after the ruling came down.
We're really happy. So we will be working diligently to make sure that we can continue these vital programs that provide cancer screenings, testing and treatment for STDs, and affordable birth control.
And there's plenty of work to do. Contracts for those services lapsed on June 30th. On Wednesday at the federal court, Barbara Dravecki, CEO of Planned Parenthood for Southwest and Central Florida, described how those agreements have worked in the past.
These contracts historically just roll over, really without much discussion or renegotiation. It's only this year, targeted by the legislature, that they are in question.
The judge's order seems to restore that status quo. But Friday, Goodhue said they're still working on the arrangements. There's also the question of admitting privileges. Florida's law carries a different requirement than the one in Texas, and clinics now have to comply with that part of the law. Planned Parenthood has warned they haven't taken a separate challenge off the table if those requirements end up leading to closures. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
With the 2016 Summer Olympics right around the corner, some state officials are worried that will cause an increase in travel-related Zika cases in Florida. And as Sasha Cordner reports, with Congress still not acting on any Zika funding bills, it's causing even more worry as officials continue to monitor the impact the mosquito-borne disease has during the summer months.
And that is a fair throw for Nibb. Nibb is three-time ACC champion, 201.7. An improvement. Oh, and into second place.
It was a windy yet sunny day in Oregon for the NCAA women's discus throwing competition in June. But that still didn't deter Kelly and Nibb from not only receiving a silver medal at Nationals, but doing her personal best in setting a new Florida State University record. The FSU junior is an athlete who specializes in discus throwing.
Spin in a circle and you toss it as far as you can.
Her second-place national win means she's on track to competing in the Olympics. The 22-year-old won't be competing for the United States. Instead, she's hoping she can compete for her hometown of Jamaica. She just needs to be in the top three in the qualifying trials to become an Olympian. Already, a number of people have qualified for this year's Olympics, but some have dropped out over concerns with the Zika virus. Still, that hasn't deterred Nibb from her dream.
I won't let that fear cripple me from doing what I've been dreaming of doing for so long.
Because Brazil is considered the epicenter of the Zika outbreak with more than 100,000 suspected cases, and Rio, where the Olympics will be held, accounts for most of Brazil's cases.
Well, if I was a woman who was thinking about becoming pregnant, I certainly wouldn't want to go to the Olympics for that matter. Otherwise, I wouldn't be that concerned.
That's Thomas Unash, a University of South Florida professor who studies mosquito-borne diseases and also chairs USF's Department of Global Health. He agrees Zika is an issue for Floridians to worry about, but for those traveling to the Olympics, not so much. He says the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which is also native to Florida, may not frequent the same places Olympic visitors will be.
I don't believe that a lot of the, you know, people who are actually going to be going to the Olympics are likely to be in a situation where they're going to be exposed at any level to the virus anyway.
Still, the Zika virus has caused for worry among Florida leaders, including Governor Rick Scott. More than a third of Florida's 67 counties have reported the mosquito-borne disease, and Florida recently got its first case of a baby born with microcephaly, a Zika-related birth defect.
We don't want another child to end up with microcephaly.
Disappointed that Congress has yet to act on Zika funding bills, Governor Scott has since authorized $26.2 million of the state's funds for preparedness and prevention efforts. A House bill for $1.1 billion just recently failed to advance in the U.S. Senate after Democrats blocked it. It contained other provisions like reversing a ban on flying the Confederate flag in military cemeteries and cutting funds for birth control services provided by Planned Parenthood. And Florida Democratic Senator Bill Nelson says it's sad how even months later the Zika funding tragedy is playing out.
Why can't we grow up and get to the point that we don't have to play partisan politics? This is a real threat.
Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio, though, did support the proposal, saying it's, quote, better than nothing. Especially with the Olympics around the corner, Rubio believes there will be an increase in travel-related cases with airport and seaport travel, as Florida is the, quote, gateway to Latin American countries like Brazil. Either way, FSU athlete Kellyanne Nibb is hopeful for her chances in the Olympics and may even hear that famous Olympic fanfare and theme song. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the so-called Pastor Protection Act is now law, but some pastors say they don't need it.
In my opinion, I don't need protection. I have the Bill of Rights, which protects me quite thoroughly. Thank you very much.
Following the Orlando shooting, lawmakers want to make it more difficult for suspected terrorists to buy guns, but some critics say the legislation doesn't address the scope of American gun violence.
Since 2009, in each year, the victims of these particular mass shooting incidents represent just 1% of the gun homicide victims in the United States.
And a Florida school principal delivers a powerful impromptu version of the national anthem at the Lincoln Memorial, the resulting video that captured the performance going insanely viral. It's a brand new month, and July 1st means a slew of bills going into effect today. Regan McCarthy reports among those measures is the so-called Pastor Protection Act.
Some call the bill the Conscience Protection Act, and the measure's sponsor, Longwood Republican Representative Scott Plakin, says that makes sense.
Conscience protection has been in our country for many, many years. We protect the consciences of Quakers. I even found a story of a guy that was a vegan that was asked to deliver discount certificates for meat products, and it was okay for him to opt out of that. So this is basically trying to come up with a way where we can all live together with different beliefs.
Others call the measure the Pastor Protection Act. And while many religious leaders spoke in favor of the legislation, other pastors, like Brant Copeland, filled committee rooms during the last legislative session to convince lawmakers the nickname isn't apt.
Well, the Pastor Protection Act, so-called, is mislabeled as well. In my opinion, I don't need protection. I have the Bill of Rights, which protects me quite thoroughly. Thank you very much.
No matter what it's called, the measure codifies a protection many say is already covered by the First Amendment by putting rules on the books that shield churches and clergy members from lawsuits if they refuse to participate in a marriage ceremony that violates their beliefs. And members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, or LGBT community, say that language seems to be aimed directly at them. Representative David Richardson is the state's only openly gay lawmaker. On the day the bill passed in the House, Richardson called the measure an insult to the gay community.
This bill is about discriminating in the name of religion, sadly.
The LGBT rights organization Equality Florida fought against the legislation until a last-minute amendment created a compromise the organization says offers some protections for the LGBT community and keeps the measure from expanding. Meanwhile, Plakin says he hopes the new law will never need to be used, but he feels it's important to have on the books just in case.
I don't think that anyone should take offense at this bill. You know, there's two sides of this coin. The Supreme Court has clearly ruled that LGBT couples can marry in the state of Florida, okay, or I'm sorry, nationwide, but they were unclear about what religious freedom protections would be needed after that. So I would like to believe that people in the LGBT community would be in favor of pastors and other practitioners not being forced to participate in a ceremony that they disagree with.
The measure is taking effect just a few weeks after a mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando left 49 victims dead. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Lawmakers across the country are demanding action in response to the Orlando shooting earlier this month. Kate Payne looks into some of the gun control measures being considered in the wake of the tragedy.
In the wake of the country's mass shootings, there's a public push for lawmakers to do something, to pass laws that could have prevented the devastation at a gay nightclub, or a movie theater, or an elementary school. Following the Pulse shooting in Orlando, lawmakers across the country are chanting, "No fly, no buy."
I do believe we shall overcome someday.
Those are House Democrats demanding a vote by staging a sit-in on the chamber floor. Supporters call it common sense gun regulation, saying people who are barred from air travel shouldn't be able to buy guns. And now Florida Democrats are calling for a special session to consider no fly, no buy. The measure would incorporate the federal terrorist watch list into the state's instant background checks. And according to a Quinnipiac poll, 86% of Floridians support it. But critics call it ineffective. Susan McManus is a political scientist at the University of South Florida.
To people who are concerned about gun violence, to be a no-brainer, but to others it's seen as insufficient, that it's not really going to do that much to stop gun violence because it doesn't get at the root of the problem.
According to federal data, suspected terrorists make up a fraction of the country's overall gun ownership. Out of the 29 million background checks the FBI ran last year, 244 of them were for people on the terror watch list. So why such broad support for a relatively limited regulation? Researchers say the policy response reflects the tragedy. But American gun violence doesn't end with mass shootings.
Since 2009, in each year, the victims of these particular mass shooting incidents represent just 1% of the gun homicide victims in the United States.
Ted Alcorn is the research director at Everytown for Gun Safety. For gun control advocates like Alcorn, mass shootings are devastating, but they're also an opportunity to continue the conversation.
These incidents of public outrage are different from the underlying problem in some important ways, but it's not to say that moments when our collective imagination is stirred and our collective concern is elevated aren't incredibly important in the long term.
Which is why groups like Everytown are demanding broader regulations, like universal background checks for all gun sales. And some licensed dealers are seeing opinions change, too, like Don Hoffman at DSH Firearms in Tallahassee. In Florida, background checks are not required for sales between private individuals, but some private sellers are turning to Hoffman to run background checks for them.
You know, they don't want a gun to be tracked to them, and then they sold it to somebody else, so they'll bring it in and we'll do a background check on that person.
Say lawmakers are able to tighten gun access across the board. Critics argue if someone really wants a gun, a background check won't stop them. Sales will just move online and underground. Susan McManus says the public is split on how to respond.
So what you have in a nutshell is a politically divided Florida and America in terms of whether gun control will really stop gun violence or whether criminals will just continue to get guns.
At the state level, it's unlikely Florida Democrats will get the support they need to hold a special session. But Democrats in Congress promise to keep fighting for legislation when they return to Washington after the 4th of July holiday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Studies show people who live with mental illness are far more likely to be victims of crime rather than perpetrators of crime. But that fact gets lost in the aftermath of a mass shooting like the Pulse nightclub massacre in Orlando. Dana Farmer, public policy coordinator for Disability Rights Florida, Denise Barber, a mental health advocate from Tallahassee, and Wesley Evans, also an advocate who lives with mental illness, discuss the problems of prejudice with Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash.
Why don't you lead off with what we had discussed earlier, Denise, about what are some of the problems that can arise for people with mental illness and public perceptions when there's a news event like this?
The possibly unintended perpetuation of the stigma that surrounds mental illnesses and individuals who have mental health diagnoses. We sometimes jump to the assumption that the person who has perpetuated the crime has a mental illness, whereas in reality, individuals with mental illnesses are much more likely to be the victims of a crime than they are to be the perpetrators of a crime.
What's the best way to counter that?
Education, communication, trying to destigmatize the myths around mental illnesses.
Dana, I'm assuming you agree.
One of the things that I wanted to mention was that when things like this happen, the news media overemphasizes the probability that they're purporting that the person actually that did the crimes has mental illness. And they don't talk very much about people successfully living with mental illnesses and what the challenges are that they've overcome. What you mentioned earlier in terms of people more likely to be the victims of violence, that's true. They're 2.5 more times likely to be attacked, raped, mugged, than are people in the general population. What we do see is I track, as part of my job, I check very carefully social media after any time an event like this takes place. And if you're following social media of people who are living with mental illnesses, people who are advocates, there's an immediate expression of just real displeasure and fear for being automatically thought of as a person with a mental illness and labeled as more likely to be a person who commits violence. People are pouring out their life stories and how they're really impacted by what's being said in the media about them. And Wes, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Thank you. I first began to experience symptoms of my illness in my early teenage years. And I was really fearful about talking of these thoughts that I was having daily. I was in a severe depression and was at times having thoughts of suicide and didn't know what to do and didn't want to talk about it to anyone. And I began to cope with those thoughts and feelings by using drugs, because that's the only thing that was available and around at that time, because the stigma were so pervasive throughout society at the time, and in some respects it still is, that I was fearful about opening up, not only to my parents, who were very loving and supportive, but also to the friends and my peers around me. And unfortunately, it took an event in which I was hospitalized because I had attempted to complete suicide. And it's unfortunate that it had to get to that place for myself and as it does for so many others. One of the things that we are trying is focus on prevention and early intervention.
Denise Barber, Dana Farmer, Wesley Evans, thank you very much for being here.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, a Florida school principal's impromptu performance at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. has gone viral. Lynn Hatter talked to the voice and the person behind the video that's generated more than 11 million views and counting on Facebook.
It's a sunny day inside the Lincoln Memorial, and in the video, people are walking around, taking photos. But the focus is on a very reluctant woman whose friends are pushing her to sing. This is Jefferson County Middle High School Assistant Principal Star Swain. And what happens next? Well, here's the video.
I know it's strong. I have a very strong voice. I know I've heard it to be commanding, even in talking voices, you know, which is probably why I never had a problem with discipline in my classrooms. And bright stars
through the pain. As the song continues, the crowd, once noisy, gradually gets quieter. There are rules to keep people from performing at national monuments, but the guards are just standing by listening. And at the end, the crowd erupts in cheers. A woman is seen in the background fanning herself and sobbing.
Oh my God. She did it.
Swain has largely shied away from public performances, with the exception of Sunday mornings at church. But she's been singing since she was a little girl in Macon, Georgia. There have been offers and promises of recording contracts, but nothing has ever come of it. A few years ago, Swain was turned down by the BET Gospel Talent Showcase, Sunday's Best, after making it through several rounds. She still remembers the audition song, It Is Well, and she remembers the responses.
It is well with my soul. It is well. It
soul. I remember what each person said, but the final say was because I had my eyes closed. Yeah. So we missed that opportunity because of that.
Her eyes are closed as she sings the national anthem. In fact, in this clip from more than 10 years ago, Swain's eyes are also shut. That's Florida A&M University's Marching 100 Band performing the song Order My Steps. Swain is singing. She's a proud former band member and FAMU alumna, but the English teacher and assistant high school principal is wary about being labeled as just a singer.
I know that everything has a purpose. Everything in my life has a purpose. And this gift is supposed to be used for that platform, to touch the lives of millions, billions, people all over the world. That is what God has given me this gift for. But not just that. It will open the doors for me to use other gifts to do the same thing, to encourage, to uplift, and to build. So, you know, when I do venture out to do other things, I don't want it to just, but you're a singer, you know. No, I'm a person who sings, who has a gift to sing, but I also have this to offer as well.
Still, that moment at the Lincoln Memorial has resonated with her too.
You know, when you come to Washington, D.C., and you come to visit the different monuments and see different sites, you're coming most times because you are an American and there's some type of value in what is there. It means something to you. So I think for them to be there at that moment, at that time, and to hear the Star Spangled Banner, their national anthem, it made it personable to them. There was something that they could relate to, and I think that is what really made them appreciative of it.
Oh, say does the Star-Spangled Banner yet wave?
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. And from Florida Tax Watch Prudential Productivity Awards, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas. Sponsored by Prudential, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plans. More information online at FloridaTaxWatch.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.